Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my friend John, engineering and producing our program. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. It is Monday. It's the 1st of May, 2023, our show in our 13th year broadcasting on the radio on 1030. KVOI, Tucson's voice. We're in the Green Thing Zocalo Village studio. We are so delighted they have the naming rights to our studio on the campus of Bustos Media here in Tucson. We have our worldwide live listening. That means you can stream our program live anywhere in the world by going to my website, buckmastershow.com, where we piggyback the live feed from KVOI.com. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. It's time for our Monday one-on-one presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Family owned and run since 1985, Moe specializes in custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, picture framing and hanging services, and hanging systems. That means Moe will gladly come out to your home and make sure that your art is up on the wall the way you want it. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowland Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com. This week's one-on-one interview is with Dr. Pat Willerton, professor of political science in the School of Government and Public Policy at the University of Arizona. Dr. Willerton is the author of books, many books. Well, actually, how many books?
About 80, then, 80 articles.
There you go. So it is a singular. Yeah. The author of a book and roughly 80 articles and chapters. His professional expertise has been focused on Russia and other former Soviet Union countries. Dr. Willerton regularly traveled to Russia since his first visit in 1982. He teaches courses on Russian domestic policies and foreign policies, as well as conducts courses on comparative governments from France and Finland to Lebanon and even Bhutan, among others. He's currently working on a research project with a Polish colleague on contrasting Russian and Polish perspectives on the war in the Ukraine. It's great to reconnect with you, Dr. Willerton. During my days on Channel 6, we met frequently with the fall of the Soviet Union. And so actually, this is about the first time I have seen you in, I don't know, 25 years or so, and you look great.
Well, thank you. I have to say, it is exciting to be here. There's a place for old dinosaurs who have been observing the international arena.
There you go.
And I fondly remember, even though it was a time of great challenge and turmoil, you and I meeting and dealing with these titanic events involving Gorbachevian reform, the collapse of the Soviet Union, Yeltsin, all of that in that really amazing era of the late 80s and the 1990s. And so life has gone on. We go on, maybe a few more wrinkles here and there, but we're still energized by what we do. And, you know, we meet at an important and dynamic time involving Russia and our country, the United States, in the global system.
Do you think, Dr. Willerton, that many think of Russia in those terms of the 1990s collapse of the Soviet Union era?
I think that's another time. And you know, in the last year, Mikhail Gorbachev passed away in August. It was a profound moment for, I think, for people like us who lived then and watched all that happened. You know, it happens that in a couple of years, we'll be observing the 40th anniversary. It'll be in March of 2025.
Wow, 40 years.
When he came to power. And I'm hoping to do at least give a public lecture on it. I'd like to do it literally on the day, March 11th. Mm-hmm. It was profound. No one could have known what was coming. And you may have noticed, if you were following the way the world reacted to his death and his legacy, that there were very real differences between the way we and the West thought of him and the way that Russians did. Russians do not fondly remember him. He is judged the worst leader they've had in 150 years, beating out Nicholas II as the second worst. And you'll notice when I mentioned these names, these happen to be two of our favorite Russian leaders, as it turns out.
Yes.
Now, I'll say something to my Russian friends about this, and they know I actually have regard for Mikhail Gorbachev. They'll say, Pat, why wouldn't you? Mm-hmm. He oversaw the destruction of our country. Mm-hmm. And we also know why you like Nicholas II. He oversaw our collapse as we went into World War One, or mm-hmm. were in World War One. So I have to say, regarding Gorbachev, there couldn't be more different perspectives. Likewise with the current leader. Vladimir Putin, I think it's fair to say, is in the pantheon for Russians as one of their greatest leaders. We view him in very negative terms.
We think of him as Hitler.
Right. So, it couldn't be more contrasting. Mm-hmm. What is a great leader for Russians? A great mm-hmm. leader is a state builder and a state consolidator. So whether you're talking about Peter the Great, who is generally viewed as their greatest leader, or let's say Alexander II, who oversaw the liberation of the serfs, educational reforms. These are people that really...
Stalin?
Stalin is there. You know, Stalin was viewed negatively at the time of Gorbachev, but he's completely come back
really
for Russians because he's seen as the man that really built Soviet power. In other words, without Stalin, I think they conclude, without his leadership, no victory in World War II, no space program. They associate with him because Lenin, of course, was youngish and was ill, was weakened by an assassination attempt. So he didn't really he was responsible for the revolution. It was Stalin that built Soviet power. So you put Stalin and Catherine the Great, and we call him Ivan the Terrible. But the word Grozny, Ivan Grozny in Russian, means formidable. Mm-hmm. Not terrible. That is a mm-hmm. meaning, but you could say that. And I have to say, he is not unlike a Henry VIII or Richelieu. These are not nice guys, okay? They build states, but they're not nice guys. So these are really their greatest in their minds. So Putin has got an 81% approval rating now. There are people that really dislike him there.
Sure.
But he's overall supported. And, of course, the Russians strongly support what they call the special military operation in Ukraine.
Biggest misconception of this Ukraine-Russian war, which is now in, let's see, we're into the second year, 14 months or so into this. Biggest misconception,
well, I would
Pat
say
Willerton.
I'm going to say two.
Okay.
Because I can't pick one. They're equal.
Go ahead.
The first is this notion that Ukraine is unified and fighting an outside Russia.
Well, that's what we think here uh-huh. in the United States, that it's yeah. like, what, 100%
yeah.
everybody's saying, you know,
right.
we're behind Ukraine. Or we love the situation. We are Ukrainians. So, not true?
Not true. The country is divided into different regions. Western and Central Ukraine have been pro-Western and I think have supported the kind of changes that have come since 2014. Citizens, many are ethnic Ukrainians, most are, but many speak Russian as the native language. In eastern Ukraine and southern Ukraine are clearly pro-Russian. The country was divided 50-50 from 1992 when the Soviet Union collapsed up until the overthrow of the government in 2014. As you know, our colors, Democrats and Republicans, were blue and red.
Yeah.
Ukraine is yellow and blue. When you look at the maps they use, and I show these in classes, mm-hmm. and we had a number of elections in Ukraine, and about half the country was yellow, pro-Western. They voted for pro-Western candidates that wanted to get into NATO and engage the West. The other blue were pro-Russian. And you might have a few regions that would flip. It's like the United States. We all know now how Rhode Island and Mississippi are going to vote in the next election.
Mm-hmm.
So the country was very divided. And so this notion that this is all about one country fighting another
yeah.
is not true. But I understand how we come there. But I would simply point out Crimea, Donbass, the whole East and South has a different view. The other misconception is that Russia continues to be a weak, befuddled, incompetent country with their military.
With a terrible military.
Right.
And terrible
yeah.
military
right.
leaders.
Right. Terrible.
Yeah.
their weapons are poor. I think this is very unfortunate, and this reflects wishful thinking and remembering the 1990s. This is not the 1990s. This is
that
not
goes
Russia.
Back to my question about no, that no. feeling about some Americans looking at Russia and thinking of, oh, that's that collapsed country
right.
that
it's
happened
not collapsed.
In the 1990s.
No, it's not collapsed. It's not a gas station masquerading as a country. And now we're learning this. And unfortunately, I think there's a lot of people here that are going to be shocked and will be upset by this because they are a powerful country. They are the richest country in the world with natural resources. They're not all about energy. Number one producer, for instance, of fertilizer. And then you start looking at where they're selling things. They have a lot of support, economic support throughout the global south. India buys more energy from them than anybody. Brazil buys a lot of fertilizer from them. They produce finished goods that may not sell here. I remember when they were trying to sell Ladas in Michigan. That didn't go over too big. Yeah. But the Russians make finished goods that appeal to people in other former Soviet Union countries and other global south countries.
And that's why the sanctions haven't worked, in your opinion.
Yeah, they haven't. Well, they backfired. Now it's Europe that's having big problems. And unfortunately, Germany is in an awful lot of trouble.
All right. When we continue with the Monday one-on-one with Professor Pat Willerton, the big question, and I'm very anxious to hear the professor's views on this, and we're all wondering, how in the world is this thing, this tragedy over there, this bloodbath, how is it all going to end? And we'll discuss that in part two of our session with Dr. Pat Willerton in our Monday one-on-one presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. But right now I want to mention, hey, have you been up to Moe's? Been up to, almost said Moe's. Have you been to Moe's? And I hope so. How about have you been to Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise? I can say I have. I was up there yesterday and picked up a couple of outstanding, because I saved one for this morning, almond croissants. We love the Mona's Danish Bakery, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise, open Tuesday through Saturday. Get there early. Doors open at 6:30. Sunday they open at 7. Mona'sDanishBakery.com on the web. You will be tempted when you see all those beautiful photographs of just about everything on the menu. More on the Monday one-on-one. We're talking the Ukraine-Russian war with an expert on Russia, Dr. Pat Willerton. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006. And the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
Welcome back. It is the Monday One-on-One, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, next to Copenhagen. And I like their website. They revamped. It looks great. They're doing e-commerce. I've actually got a couple of my antique maps that are available for you at moesgallery.com. Just look at the Bill Buckmaster collection. Sounds very official, but there's some really nice items there. All right. Dr. Pat Willerton is with us. It's great to reunite with Professor Willerton after all these years. Haven't really interfaced with him in a bunch of years. When I was over on the TV show, we did a lot of work together. When the fall of the Soviet Union, which seems like a million years ago, Professor Willerton, professor of political science in the School of Government and Public Policy at the University of Arizona, and his professional expertise is focused on Russia and other former Soviet Union countries. So the big question, how, in your opinion, Professor Willerton, do you see this conflict, this bloody conflict, ending? Not well?
Well, I'm going to preface my comments by saying I have been wrong thinking about timing.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this would be over much more quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't had any doubt about the ultimate outcome, which is the Russians will achieve all their goals. So Ukraine will not be in NATO. Ukraine will be demilitarized. Crimea and Donbass are now a part of Russia, never to leave. And they will remove these nationalist right-wing forces that they call Nazis. I don't want to get into that whole issue. Now, not because they don't have legitimate arguments, but this is just a can of worms.
Mm-hmm.
We could spend 2 hours on what is a Nazi.
Yeah.
Let's just say they're fanatics, and there are people there that really hate Russians. I'll put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
They will achieve all these goals. Now, how long? I don't know. I thought it would be quicker, but I think the government there is balancing different forces. The common view here, of course, is they're at a stalemate and they're incompetent. I don't believe that. First of all, they don't want to kill large numbers of Ukrainians. And the number of civilians that have been killed, I'm looking at international organization estimates, are very low for a war like this. You might have thought hundreds and hundreds of thousands.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happened in Iraq,
yeah,
or Afghanistan. I've seen figures 15 to 20,000.
Mm-hmm.
That's low. So there's clearly an effort by the warring parties not to kill civilians. Now, that'll work up somebody because they'll see a civilian's killed. Civilians are always killed in wars. Mm-hmm. Many civilians died in France when we liberated it. But on the other hand, I think that the number's low because they've been very careful about it. A lot of soldiers have died. A lot of soldiers have died. The Russian military leadership determined last fall, as I understand it, they were looking at up to 30 months. They learned last spring when they had a tentative agreement with the Zelensky government where they achieved their goals, basically, and they began withdrawing their forces from Kiev and Kharkov. And then Prime Minister Boris Johnson went to Kiev and it was rejected, that they were at war with the West. This is their view now. This is a war with the West led by the United States. So this is now, as I understand it, up to 30 months. We're less than, 30 months from last August, not 30 months from March. So we're not even a year into that.
So you see this could go on a couple more years.
It could. So my thought, I'm offering reflections.
Yes.
I think you sense I'm being hesitant because nobody knows, really.
Let me
offer one thought.
Okay,
I think that Kiev, Ukraine's running out of everything. Mm-hmm. They've lost hundreds of thousands of troops. They've lost the best trained, killed or wounded.
Yes.
They're running out of ammunition. They're running out of equipment. Everything they're running out of. The army that we built up that was very powerful a year ago is gone. Now we're trying to put in another one. I think everything will be dried up by about August. I just don't see that we're running in there. And I sense that many countries, starting with ours, we're getting tired. I don't see the big money. I don't see the weapons. And certainly in Europe. So what I'm saying to you is this is a long-haul issue, but I think it's possible we'll see a collapse the way World War One we saw a German collapse. This is, for the Russians, a war of attrition. They're just going to keep grinding. This isn't about territory. I would encourage your viewers, as they watch this, don't look at the map. Look at what's happening in terms of who's losing what and who has what. I think you're going to see ultimately, I would predict a collapse. I'm going to say September. I don't know.
What about how can...
Then they move. Let me just
okay,
be clear.
Yeah.
Then they move. Then territory comes in. They'll move.
Yeah. How can the NATO alliance allow that to happen? How
do they stop it?
Will the United States allow that to
happen?
How
do they stop it? We're sending in weapons now, and they don't seem to be making any difference. There will be a counteroffensive.
Yes.
We're counting
on it.
That's
what we're hearing about.
We will see.
What are you hearing in terms of numbers with the counteroffensive?
I heard about 48,000. These are people we've been training in various places.
Right.
Remember, the Russians have just about removed the air defense system of Ukraine. They can bomb almost everywhere at will. By June, the Ukraine will have no air defense. Russia can bomb anywhere at will in the country. If NATO sends airplanes in from outside, that would be viewed as an act of war, and they will respond, and they've said that. If planes fly in from Poland, they will attack the bases in Poland. So that's a big decision we have to make. How far do we go? We're giving them things. Are we giving them enough? Russia may have up to 1 million troops. They may have 3,000 or 4,000 tanks. We're giving them a couple of hundred. Mm. They have thousands of artillery pieces. This is an artillery war. This is a distance war.
Yes, it is.
70% of the casualties are through artillery. To give you one statistic, 6 months ago, Russia was firing 60,000 rounds of ammunition a day, 60,000. Ukraine was 6. Now it's about 10 to 20,000 Russia to 1,000 Ukraine.
Yeah, the Ukrainians, they say they are running out of ammunition. So
that's how I see this phase ending. But if you're asking the long term,
this
could go on long term. Mm. But the Russians, so it's not territory now. I want to be very clear. Right now it's about attrition. This is like World War One.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody invaded Germany. Eventually the Germans collapsed.
Yeah.
This is not a World War II scenario, but once the Ukrainians collapse, which I think may be coming, it probably is coming, then the Russians will start to move. And how far do they move? Do they only go through the east, which is pro-Russian? Are they actually going to go to the west? You had former President Dmitry Medvedev say, tanks to the border with Poland.
Yes.
That's a heck of a statement. And trust me, they will not be welcomed in Western Ukraine. When you look at the elections, that was a 98% would vote for the pro-Western candidates in Western Ukraine. They don't like Russians there.
Mm. So you and a Polish colleague have been working on this kind of contrasting Russian and Polish perspectives on the war. Just briefly, what are those contrasts? Please?
Well, we'll find out because we fundamentally disagree. In fact, I had a nice conversation with him before I came over here this morning, and we're sorting out our ground rules to talk to each other about it because we have pretty different views. He's got a very mainstream Polish view. So let's put it this way. Have me back in a year. Hey, maybe when he's here, he's coming in the fall.
Yeah.
You could have the two of us on in the fall.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll need a little more time. But we have very different views. And this is why I want to work with him. It's very stimulating. Very stimulating.
So in conclusion, you're saying that be prepared. This could be quite a ride still ahead.
Yes. Look.
And there was one other point I wanted to bring up. I've noticed that just from the media coverage, in Washington, the focus, especially among the Republicans, seems to be the growing threat as they see it in China and with a possible Chinese invasion of Taiwan. You're just not hearing as much about support for Ukraine.
I saw a really interesting cartoon of an elder couple putting up flags as if on July 4th, the way we put up the American flag. Yeah. They're out by the window, the balcony.
Yeah.
And the wife is facing down the Ukraine flag, and the husband is putting up the Taiwanese flag. And I think that's where we're going. I agree with you. That's my impression. I was talking to a friend of mine who works at one of the military academies. And I said, what's the thinking there? I mean, do they believe that this is a stalemate? Do they believe Russia can be defeated? He said, no. Mm. We, in his judgment, they know this is basically over. I mean, the outcome. They know the outcome. They just don't know how long. But the focus there, he said, was on what you're talking about, China, Taiwan. Mm-hmm. So I agree with you. I think people here are tired, and we've given a lot. I don't think we want to send in our troops. I hope people here understand for the Russians this is existential. This is existential. I don't think it is for us. Ukraine was never a part of our sphere of influence.
All right. Professor Pat Willerton, great to see you again. Thank
great
you very much.
Great to see you. Thank you.
All right. Our Monday one-on-one presented by our friends at Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and their website, moesgallery.com. Our border report with Keith Rosenblum. It's coming up right after our mid-show break. Be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
And welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. We love Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Beautiful 13-acre site, home to Zocalo. All that great merchandise, some beautiful Talavera pottery from Mexico, and other places, even some European items as well. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com are the two websites. They are open daily, actually, Green Things' 53rd year of business. Our live line for our telephone interviews, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Once a month, we do our border report with longtime border reporter, observer, Keith Rosenblum. Keith, how are you?
Bill, I'm at the peak of my observing. So let me just tell you, if anyone in your universe is capable today of making shrewd observations about Mexico, you're talking to them.
Okay, I think we've got the right guy. El Paso, city of El Paso, declaring, Keith Rosenblum, state of emergency. This is all about Title 42 coming to an end. Let me ask you, is this Title 42 coming to an end a big deal?
Yikes. I think Keith Rosenblum would like to retract everything he said about having shrewd observations. This is one of those, it's one of those tipping point things where it's always, I mean, if you go back, I saw the other day that, what was his name, Roman Simpson Mazzoli had died. And if you go back to the 1980s, you'll remember Simpson Mazzoli, IRCA, Immigration and Reform, something or other act. And that was going to be the definitive solution to immigration issues. And what I can say today is there is no definitive solution ever on this issue. The only possibility, the only thing that will mitigate it, which is to say it's not going to solve it, it will mitigate it, is that you have strong economies in the migrant exporting nations. And so if Haiti, Dominican Republic, Venezuela, you name it, Guatemala, Salvador, Nicaragua, I can start naming countries. Mexico is, to some of those countries, the United States. It's the new United States. You can get a job easily. The Mexicans have been great in terms of accommodating their own immigrant population. And so the end of Title 42, I think, is going to be, we've uncorked something, and there's going to be temporarily a jolt in numbers and in what to do. And I don't blame El Paso. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me that it follows for all the U.S. border cities. The Calexico does it. Nogales does it. McAllen does it. San Ysidro or San Diego does it. These are distortions when you have policies that change, and I just don't think that there's a solution other than, I mean, working at the wrong place to me to see what El Paso is going to do or what Texas is going to do. The real solution is what's going on in these countries to foster strong economies, because, Bill, you can live very well in Nicaragua on X per year as opposed to earning 4X in the United States. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that people aren't earning earning X in Nicaragua. They're earning half X. So people are going to migrate. There's no, people always look for better opportunity, but not in quantum ways. And what we're doing right now, we've made it a felony to, our federal prisons are filled with people who are repeat offenders. I don't see a solution. And the question is whether we're going to be able to remedy this in the short term. But again, to me, the issue isn't Title 42, really. It's not these patchwork things that are done along the border of what might come with Title 43 or 42.6 or some new improved thing. Those are all fine, but they're really none addresses what the root is, which are economies that are frail in these other countries. And we could play a huge role, as Mexico is, by the way, in fortifying these other nations.
Someone by the name of Dara Lind, a senior fellow at the American Immigration Council, agrees with you, Keith Rosenblum. She published an op-ed recently in, I think it was New York Times, I've got it in front of me, maybe the Wall Street Journal, but the title is Give Up the Fantasy of Solving the Border Crisis. Give up the...
I don't know whether I plagiarized her or the other way around, or whether two great minds just coincided.
So, it's a fantasy, she says, and when she goes on to say, when it comes to immigration, the United States is stuck in a version of Groundhog Day.
Oh, good. You know what? You have made me feel affirmed in that way, because my thoughts are, it's like you hear about great theories in medicine or in physics and things like that, and evidently they take place not because anybody is plagiarizing the work of another. They just take place in two unlikely places in the world at the same time. So this woman, who I've never heard of, and Keith Rosenblum came to the same conclusion, and I did so with half of her IQ.
And the article is her op-ed. I'll just read the conclusion. It's time to let go of the fantasy of solving a border crisis with the uncomfortable and unsupported implication that the only successful border policy is the least humane one.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I mean, that I wish that I could articulate the way she just did. You could have had, you got, why don't you see whether she'll be doing a monthly Mexico report henceforth?
We'll have to track down Miss Lind.
But she doesn't know anything about Nogales crossing times, does
no.
she?
No,
or
she doesn't.
The new airport in Mexico City. So you know what? I take that back, too.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know all about the kind of area that you know about the border, which...
Trivia. I know the trivia part.
I'll tell you, though, this thing about U.S. border deaths doesn't get a lot of publicity anymore, but it's not a surprise to you, but... this is a record. This 2023 has been a record year, Keith Rosenblum.
Yep. I mean, it is, and I don't want to sound too callous, but juxtaposed with, what can you say, with world populations or with numbers, it is going to be, and it's something to grieve about. But you know what, Bill? One of the that would never have happened if we hadn't buttressed the Border Patrol presence. Also, when I came to Tucson in '78, I think the Border Patrol had 2,000 members, maybe, and it wasn't a felony to do things, and you didn't have to present papers when you crossed into the U.S. And did we have an immigration problem? Not really. I mean, really, it was just not a problem. We defined it as a problem. The Wall Street Journal for years said, "Stop trying to solve a problem that's not one." Nurse, well, we need whatever. Stop making an issue of it. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I just think we need labor. Look anywhere.
Yeah, and we are kidding ourselves thinking that we that we can get by without.
Yeah. Have you seen the now hiring signs that are on just about every business that you're going to find here in Tucson and really in the United States? Everybody's hiring.
As in all of your sponsors, as in everybody.
Everybody.
Correct?
Everybody.
Yeah, well, we have this. I have a friend who's in China. Tom Sang is a buddy of mine from years back. And Tom was, we spoke yesterday by FaceTime. And Tom tells me, Keith, he says, we have two different worldviews on things. You think that in the U.S. we believe always that more freedom will enable us to make wiser, greater decisions. And in China, people believe that a little more authoritarianism with organization will make all the difference. And look who's been the country that's roared in recent years. So before we dismiss economies because of relative freedom of We have freedoms to have AR-15s, don't we? We have lots of freedoms, and yet we work ourselves into these intractable issues in the borders.
Keith, let's take a break right here. We'll be back with you with our monthly border report. Keith Rosenblum with us on the live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. It's the Buckmaster Show. May Day, first day of May. Buckmaster on the radio continues right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
This is Kate Delaney. Tune in later tonight as we talk about everything that happened throughout your day. Tonight at 10 on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios. Things are warming up. That means a good place to cool off is Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, where the elevation is a mile high. Think about Denver, the mile high city. It's about 5,500 feet in Silver City, so it's going to be cooler over there. So there's a perfect, well, look at that, 78 degrees right now in Silver City. Perfect temperature to do some hiking in the Gila National Wilderness. Visit the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument for more about Silver City. I hope you'll check out their website, southwestnewmexico.org. Everything you need to know before you jump in the car, or the truck, or maybe even the motorcycle and make the 3-hour drive east of Tucson. We have Keith Rosenblum with us on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Keith is our border contributor. He's with us at least once a month with the Border Report. We had a fascinating Monday one-on-one today with Professor Pat Willerton in the first half hour of the show. He's probably, I consider him to be, and I know they do at the University of Arizona, the expert on Russian politics. He's been covering Russia for 50 years. And he had some very interesting things to say, Keith, about how he sees the whole Ukraine-Russian war finally ending. And he said it's not going to be a pretty picture and something that could go on a couple of more years. Is this war taking up any of the attention of the Mexican president during his sometimes 3-hour-long daily news conferences?
Well, it was 3 hours today, actually, Bill. So I'm not sure whether it was a lucky stab or whether you're now paying attention to something that's mostly irrelevant to our lives. But let me also say that Keith Rosenblum, in addition to being your monthly border correspondent, who's soon to be replaced by the academic who wrote the story, the essay.
Miss Dara Lind.
Be that as it may, Keith Rosenblum is also of Russian descent, whose grandparents on the paternal side were in the Donbas region and loathed both the Russians and the Ukrainians. I have to call my brother periodically to find out which side we're on. That shows how dense Keith Rosenblum is. Anyway, the answer to your question is that President Lopez Obrador broaches the topic frequently, and he does it for this reason. He wants to tell the Mexicans, I have done the best job possible of running the economy. I'm doing this for healthcare. I'm doing this for to attract tourism. I'm doing this for public safety. And the one area where he hasn't been able to keep his word is keeping prices down. And so, of course, what he says is the Russians and Ukrainians have set into not a free fall, but they've made all of our grains more expensive, a lot of our feed things, and have, even though for Mexico it also has an upside to it, have pushed the prices of oil up. So he refers to it all the time. And I don't know. I'm not good enough. I'd be interested in Professor Willerton. Is that his name?
Yes.
His analysis, because it could be accurate. Lopez Obrador is deceitful on many issues of our day, but he actually might be accurate on this one, that these the fallout. When you spend money on armaments, you generally don't spend money on, and you know, we've held up grain shipments and other things as a result of, or they've been held up, I should say, as a result of the war. And so I hadn't heard that, but I do know that the ripples, the ripple effect of that war reaches all through the world, and Mexico and Central and South America are no exceptions. And so if you're a president who's really aching to present a legacy of accomplishment, and you've got this one area that you just can't justify, or just can't you get the numbers to support you, you say, and he may be right, that's the war in Ukraine.
Has he taken a position on the war in Ukraine?
Traditional Mexican position of non-intervention, because that's in their constitution. But that said, as they supposedly don't take interventionist position on lots of issues, but end up doing it anyway, he was noticeably favoring Putin at the beginning, and then last week, President Zelensky appeared before the Mexican Congress by Skype or by whatever it is, by video. And so the Mexican Congress, I think, passed a resolution in favor of Ukraine. So I would say, yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. And also for me, who's not a student of history, I would like to say I am, but that's only to people that don't know history. I wish I could go back also and look at Mexican decision-making during prior to World War II, because ultimately the Mexicans joined the Allies, but were being recruited actively by the Axis. So, you know, you have these issues. Mexico is a sovereign country. They do not have to march in lockstep with the United States of America or Canada or Guatemala. They make their own calls. So I don't know. I believe that Mexicans generally, maybe even not unanimously, but for the majority, big majority, support Ukraine, as does the world. On the other hand, you know, you have a guy who's much more in the leadership style of Putin than Zelensky at the helm.
Let me go back. Something I heard you say about Mexico has not been able to keep prices down. Are you saying that their inflation has mirrored the concern here in the United States, our inflationary numbers?
I am saying exactly that. I believe their numbers are absolutely the same. In other words, what Mexico has done, which is also fascinating, is Mexico, and this is López Obrador's strategy to appeal to the poorer parts of the population. As you'll recall, Keith Rosenblum's theory on Mexico is look at, instead of looking at one country of 125 million people, look at one country of 30 that are first world, look at another country of 40 that are third world, and then look at everybody else in between. And so what the president has done has been to appeal the middle and lower worlds that are Mexico. And he has done, he's kept gasoline prices. They haven't gone up at all. I think they're cheap. They're cheaper now than in the U.S. They're now refining their own. They bought the Deer Park refinery in Texas. So there's lots of things he's done. And also staples have been kept low. So, yes, but he's geared his economic policy to the lower middle class and the poor. And you know what? That's enough to keep 50.0001 percent of the population very, very happy.
Who sets their inflation? Who sets their, you know, like we have the Federal Reserve?
Banco de Mexico.
Okay.
Banco de Mexico and the Secretary of whatever it is. I can't remember what name it is, but no, those numbers are reliable. They don't have a Ministry of Propaganda that, you know, those things. They have their own breadbasket, and those numbers are absolutely trustable. And let me return to one other thing that we talk about from time to time, but I also think because it's so remarkable that it ought to be stressed. The singular currency in the world, I believe, that has not only depreciated against the dollar during the pandemic and subsequently, but has appreciated considerably is the Mexican peso. So Keith Rosenblum knows it because my dental bills were a little bit higher than they've been before. I'm paying a little bit more for all my meals. The peso right now is about 17 and a half to the dollar. When you and I were discussing this, when López Obrador came in, it was at 18 and a half or 19, and people were saying, oh, God, with him, it's going to go into the 20s. Well, guess what? The radical, you know, leftist, whatever guy has an economy that is rock solid and a peso that is that people buy long term. How's that?
And why does it matter? Well, of course, it's going to matter with immigration issues for sure.
That's correct. Mexico's got it is doing her part, certainly, and people invest when they got a stable currency. They're a lot more willing to take some gambles. You cannot have a business community that is always on guard against a devaluation. And Mexico, in the last 30, 40 years, has had enough of them that in Tucson you can't find anybody to change your pesos to dollars. How's that?
Really? Where would you go?
You don't go.
Huh?
There's like a half dozen Casas de Cambio in Tucson, and they rip you off. So,
wow.
You don't go anywhere in Tucson.
Okay. Keith, final thought before we let you go.
Oh, are you having a comment on something or just any final thought in life?
Any final thought.
Okay, I will. I admire you and what you do as one of the lone, if not the lone, talk show guy in Tucson.
Wow.
And I really think it's about time you got into what we used to say was a Winnebago, but I think that's passé.
Winnebago.
And traveled into Mexico and did a week or two.
A road trip.
Of meeting people. It's time for you to do it, and Keith Rosenblum will do what he can to help you find the sponsors along the way.
Thank you.
To immerse yourself, at least in the North Bill, if not Mexico City.
Thank you very much. Keith Rosenblum, always a pleasure. Stay well. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Keith.
You bet. Bye-bye.
All right. That's going to do it for the Monday edition of the Buckmaster Show as we plunge into the merry month of May. I hope it's merry. All right. Hope they fix my air conditioning at home. That's my final thought, my wish, after a really uncomfortable night. Of course the air conditioning went out on the first 100-day degree day of the year. Don't they call that Murphy's Law? Anyway, Buckmaster saying, over and out, back with you tomorrow.